everybody. Welcome to the Large Neutron Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is the shaking his head at me because I was goofing off when I should have been starting, Jonathan Strickland.
I was turned into a chicken nugget.
Oh, how do we tell you apart from other chicken nuggets so we don't eat you?
Oh, it's okay, because I got better.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Yeah. We originally had in our lineup a movie called Chicken Nugget, mm-hmm. where a woman turns into a chicken nugget, but then we both decided that the only thing we could say about this movie is that it sure does look weird.
Maybe in a good way, but yeah, it just looks
weird. Yeah. Not necessarily like weird as in a, oh, that looks weird, but more of a, that looks weird. If you are curious about a film about in which a woman is turned into a chicken nugget, there's a trailer on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You can look for it, but we're not going to really talk about that today. Instead, we're going to talk about a bunch of other stuff, including things that we've recently watched and or read or listened to or whatever.
Yeah, and because it's been almost a month, we're so sorry, just between travel and family. We had to take a short hiatus, but it's been like 3 weeks, and so that's been a lot of stuff for me.
I'm sure it was a lot of stuff for me, but I didn't keep track of it while it was happening, mm-hmm. so I only remember one thing.
Yeah, well, and like, you know, I work from home, so some of it was kind of half in the background, or like when I'm walking on my treadmill, I'll watch something, so... It was always, almost always, pulling double duty with something else. But for me, well, first off, you know, I traveled to Halifax to watch Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead with Billy Boyd and Dominic Monaghan, and it can't replace my love for the movie with Gary Oldman and Tim Roth and Richard Dreyfuss, because that is just such a phenomenal piece of work. But I think that it was maybe equal to, at least, maybe a little better, because when you're watching the play, they have to transition more logically between scenes for it to make sense.
They can't make that sort of dreamy scene change where, like, which actually adds to kind of that unrealistic, somewhat like unreliable approach that the story has, but you have, mm-hmm. you know, you have to deal with actual practical sets and things and a stage, yeah.
Which
in the case of a live performance.
Yeah. The costumes were amazing. The set was amazing. I would have posted a whole bunch of pics, but they requested, you know, no cameras. So I have one picture of the set, but I was kind of waiting for the end of the Toronto run, 'cause they're in Toronto right now. If you're in Toronto, I know we have a couple of Canada listeners. If you're in Toronto and there are still tickets, I highly recommend it.
As I understand it, you saw the very last performance in Halifax, right?
But
you weren't scheduled to see the very last one. Oh. You were scheduled to see the second to last one.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Jonathan, because I need to give you mad props, because we were there closing weekend. We were supposed to see it Saturday. Closing night was Sunday. And then we were supposed to fly back Sunday. But Saturday, apparently, was a weird global warming weather pattern in Halifax where it rained a whole bunch and then temperatures dropped below freezing. I was actually talking with a couple of like the people at the restaurants and like people that we interacted with in town. I was like, yeah, this is actually kind of like Georgia weather. And they're like, so it's your fault, huh? But it wasn't even so much that we're worried about like roads per se, although that was definitely a concern. It's that when the metro system closes down in Halifax, which it did because they didn't know what to expect, the theater also closed down. So at that point, we're like, my husband, who this is the second time he's bought me tickets to see a play out of town that we've had issues with, was like, I'm never doing it again. And I'm like, it always works out. And even if not, I really enjoyed Halifax. It's only, you know, it's a small town. So like a day or two will do you there and then you can explore the greater Nova Scotia. But it was delightful. It had some really good food. We went to see a lighthouse in the snow. It was brilliant. Anyhow, I'm getting sidetracked. So we're trying to make the best of our now snow day and find places that are open because everything's closing down because of the weather in Halifax. And I had briefly thought, well, maybe we could see the Sunday show. But I looked online and it was sold out. And so I was sitting, you know, I told the friends that knew that we were going there, like Jonathan and a couple of my other friends, that what had happened. And Jonathan, super amazingly, and Becca were like, maybe our tickets are for closing night. Let us see. And if they are, we'll give them to you, which is incredibly wonderful. And sir, I still need to pay you back for them. They were. And so we were able to get everything else changed so that we could stay till Sunday and see them. Because otherwise, it was a very expensive trip to Halifax for some good seafood chowder.
Yeah. We, Becca had bought those tickets for me as a present last year. And what we did not know last year was that between last year and the final performance of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead in Halifax, Nova Scotia, I would nearly die. Yeah. And that as a result, I was going to be going through a whole bunch of different medical visits and things. And a lot of stuff would be thrown up in the air and be uncertain. And that included things like planned travel. So we had decided that out of an overabundance of safety, we would have to skip this opportunity, which really broke my heart. But on the flip side, I'm so happy that it meant that those tickets got to go to you, Ariel, so that you got the chance to actually see it. Because as you and I both know, that trip, it takes a lot of work to get to Nova Scotia from Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah.
And it's not inexpensive.
No. It took more work because we took the cheaper flights. So you can take either very expensive flights to Nova Scotia and get either not a layover or a small layover. Or you can take still expensive, but not backbreakingly expensive flights, which means that, you know, on the way there, I had like a 6-hour layover. And on the way back, I had an 11-hour layover and I had to leave for the airport at 2 a.m. Eastern time
to
get home.
Yeah.
Totally worth it. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Jonathan. Billy Boyd and Dominic Monaghan were great. The rest of the cast was delightful. I really liked all the artistic choices. There was a really good like camaraderie, like both that I can't stand you and also you're my best friend thing going on that is integral to Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. It made me cry a little bit at the end, even though I've seen it and I've read it and I've even done bits from it. And I've been Rosencrantz and Hamlet. but then I got to meet like the director briefly afterwards because he was in the lobby and tell him, you know, I liked his work. And then I got to... Dominic Monaghan and Billy Boyd were both at the stage door. So I got to briefly meet them and get a picture with Billy Boyd, who I just absolutely love his work. I think he's incredibly talented. And he was very kind and generous in taking pictures and giving autographs. I didn't get an autograph because he was in a hurry, but I did get a picture. Absolutely delightful. I loved it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. But that's not the only thing you saw in the weeks that we were offline.
I watched all of the second season of Star Trek Strange New World. I have thoughts about the musical episode. Mainly, I liked the music, but it felt... And I like the music, and I like the fact that they listened to each actor and wrote music specifically for their voices to showcase them in the best light possible, but it meant that the music in the episode felt disjointed to me, but I still enjoyed it.
Okay.
A good season. It was better than the first season, I think. I watched the first episode and a half of Monarch... which is the Godzilla show on Apple TV because it was on the plane. but I think that's the one that's gonna get me to get Apple TV next month when I'm done with my Paramount month because it gave me like real Lost vibes and I enjoyed Lost a lot. I watched Life and Beth season 2, which is a semi-autobiographical story about Amy Schumer's life. Brilliant, just brilliant work. It depicts life with people on the ASD spectrum incredibly well. It's funny, it's thoughtful, it's heartening, it's wonderful. I highly recommend it, even if you're not a big Amy Schumer fan. I watched Dune 2. Also thought that was better than Dune 1. They did miss out on the opportunity to call it Dune, so that the third one could be Dune. But that's okay.
It does seem like a missed opportunity. You're right.
Yeah. And then I watched like the first episode or two of Avatar The Last Airbender on Netflix.
Cool. For me, Well, first of all, why did you think of Avatar? Because I've read mixed reviews, but I haven't started it.
So it's kind of I don't want to take up too much time because I've already taken up so much time at the intro of our episode, but
it's okay because you've watched way more stuff than I did, and most of the time I provide about twice as much vocal content as you do. So this is good. You're catching up.
Okay. So I enjoy it so far. I understand that they made some changes to like the source material and it might have made the story or characters weaker in some points, according to various friends I have that watched it. I enjoyed the cartoon a lot, but because I haven't seen it in a while, I was able to kind of separate myself from it and kind of watch it as a standalone thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm enjoying it so far. Of course, I'm not very far in, but I think it's good. But honestly, the thing I was going to say is it's similar to my reaction to the Dark Tower movie, which is I haven't read the Dark Tower books, so it was a fair to middling movie.
Sure, yeah.
But I think that's still generous because it was the movie was Dark Tower was a little bit of a slog. I'm not finding that as much with Avatar. I think the actors are very charming.
Okay. Well, for me, the only thing that I can remember watching that really falls into our purview is the completely made up Adventures of Dick Turpin on Apple TV Plus. It's the one with Noel Fielding. And Dick Turpin was probably a real person. He was a highwayman. But I say probably because most of the stories about Dick Turpin date more than a century after his recorded death. So it's kind of like Robin Hood in that it's more of a figure of legend than any sort of historical actual character. Like there very well may have been a Dick Turpin, but certainly he didn't do the things that are attributed to him, which is why the series is called The Completely Made Up Adventures of Dick Turpin.
Mm-hmm.
It's very silly. Silly is the best word I would use for it. There have been people I've seen who have compared it to Our Flag Means Death because it has a lot of like anachronistic moments in it,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I don't otherwise see a good analog there because Our Flag Means Death, while having silly moments in it, a lot of the humor gets to be a lot more dry in that series. And Dick Turpin is just plain out silly. But I enjoy it. And a lot of folks who are in a lot of different English comedy show up. So like Rich Fuller, who was in The Mighty Boosh, shows up, Greg Davies in Taskmaster. Like he shows up there. There are a few that have, appeared, and Mark Heap is playing Dick Turpin's dad. I love Mark Heap. I think of him from Spaced. I'm really enjoying it for what it is, which is lighthearted, silly comedy that has a would-be highwayman as the protagonist.
Interesting. And that's interesting to know because I feel like in Our Flag Means Death, and I haven't watched Dick Turpin yet, but it is very high on my list. I feel like in Our Flag Means Death that I really like when they're more serious and dry, but when they try to be funny, it almost feels too hard and too basic or base.
I didn't really click with Our Flag Means Death until about episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first two episodes in particular just didn't really work for me. And I was kind of bummed because I had been looking forward to the series.
Yeah.
The introduction of Blackbeard definitely helped considerably.
Yeah.
And then by episode 4, when Blackbeard's like a character in the show, I thought, Now the show is clicking for me. And it wasn't just the character of Blackbeard. It was everything seemed to be working better. Like it wasn't just because Taika Waititi was there being silly, but the fact that everything in the show seemed to work a little better.
Yeah, I felt like, I agree. I feel like the first two episodes, especially a little bit still here and there, but I feel like especially the first two episodes of season one, the comedy felt like a bunch of just barely okay SNL skits stitched together with a thin storyline to me, which is Yeah. Probably going to upset some of our friends, but I did end up really enjoying the series. I've watched a couple episodes of season two, but I haven't finished it yet.
I haven't even finished season one because I fell off of it. And it's not, again, like, I know, like, we do, Ariel and I have friends who are deeply invested in Our Flag Means Death. A lot of them in the LGBTQ community, because there's a lot of representation in that show. And I totally get it. And that's awesome. And I love it, them for it. But yeah, I'm the same way where I kind of like, I was enjoying it and it did click with me, but other stuff just came up and I never felt the strong enough pull to go back to it. I'm sure I will, but it's kind of joined a list of increasingly long amounts of content that I need to get to that I just haven't yet.
Yeah. Oh, it's sad because, you know, conceptually I can really like a thing and then in actuality I don't, but some people, like, conceptually it can carry them through more too. And everybody has different things that they enjoy. So
sure. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I did watch one more thing that I forgot to mention.
Oh God, Ariel, come on.
no, I was going to watch it on the plane during my travels, and I'm really glad I didn't, because that is not a movie you want to watch with anyone around, if you're me, which is Poor Things.
Oh, yeah. No, I still haven't seen Poor Things, but I've heard enough to know that that is definitely, for you, Ariel, a movie that is best watched not on the back of someone else's seat with people sitting on either side of you.
It gives you a lot to think about. It is very interesting. I love, like, the costume choices and the art style and all that. You know, could I say it left me feeling good? No. But, you know, I understand what they're trying to get at, and I think it was beautifully executed. But a good at least third of the movie is, like, very explicit scenes in a sexy fashion. And that it got to be a lot for me.
It got
because there were so many of them back to back that I'm like, this is just another way to show.
And some of them really are back to back.
This is just another way to show nudity, essentially, in a scene. And I was like, I'm, you know, but if you're not as puritanical as I am, you might like it. I thought it was very well done, but but subject matter wise, it was hard to watch too.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those that was high on my list, still is high on my list to watch. And, I'm still hoping to catch that, sooner rather than later. I think it's streaming on Hulu at the moment, which of course is the one service I don't yet have. By the way, side rant, if I'm allowed, just really quickly. So
it's our podcast. Do whatever you want.
I was excited to be able to finally bundle Hulu with Disney Plus, because I was already a Disney Plus subscriber. And I looked into it, and the problem is I had opted to save money by paying for Disney Plus on an annual basis rather than a monthly basis. In order to subscribe to a bundle with Hulu, you have to be on a monthly basis. So then I switched from annual to monthly, but because I've already paid for a year, that monthly fee doesn't start till November. So I can't bundle Disney Plus with Hulu until November, which means I don't have an incentive to get Hulu now because it'll be cheaper to bundle it in November.
So I would say call them and see what they could do, because I bet they would want you to be able to, they'd want you to pay more to bundle Hulu. But you know, I don't, that's 10 years ago me saying, call them, they'll work with you, because that's the experience I've had. I don't know if there is even a number to call right now.
Well, and I don't know how they would do it, because I am paid through for Disney Plus until November. So would they just charge me a smaller amount per month for Hulu by itself and then? But I don't know.
It's possible. And Hulu is, like, the one subscription that you really can't share with anybody. They're super particular about your...
I don't share anyway because I work in media. I understand whole model. Like, I understand both sides of it. Don't get me wrong. I understand, like, folks who, you know, they're like, there's so many streaming services out there and they pile up. Like, those fees get... I mean, that's why I'm not a subscriber to Hulu now, is because I'm already subscribed to so many other things. But so I totally get that from an economic perspective, but I also get it from the company's side. And I understand, and we both have talked about how challenging it is for streaming services to be profitable and still make content that folks want to see. It's hard, and we haven't really figured it out yet. So I totally get both sides. And maybe I'll break down and subscribe to Hulu on a month by month basis and then just bundle it in November so I can finally watch all the stuff that's only available on Hulu. Yeah. But I've held out so far.
No, I get it. And I'm not saying that, you know, people should share their internet stuff, because also in the industry. And that's why shows get cut or streaming networks go under or they raise their prices, is because people are sharing instead of subscribing. I recently bought a few months worth of subscription for a family member as a gift instead of sharing my login. I
well,
get it, but like,
now that we've covered stuff, what we have seen, and you know, we've been talking for more than 20 minutes, how about we get to some 30 seconds or less?
Cool. I would say we'll bring them down to 15 seconds or less, but I know that will mess up your editing.
Yeah, one, that music clip will just keep on playing the whole way through. And two, I script mine out, so I'd have to read them twice as fast.
You're so much better. You're so much better than I. Okay, so this first story, also full disclosure, we're covering a lot of stuff that like we were going to talk about last week and weren't able to record, so we were going to be back last week. So we've kept some of that in because it's fun. And the first of which is there was a giant costume sale in London, or auction in London recently. And one of the things that sold was the shirt that Colin Firth wore when he was dripping wet in Pride and Prejudice. It sold for £20,000, which was way more than they thought they were going to get for it. I think they thought it was going to get like 10,000 max. I had a friend who, when I told them about this, said, "I'm pretty sure it's dry by now, the shirt." I hope so. Let's say keep it in constant state of like misting it. But I don't think it would hold up if that were the case. To me, the really like the most cool thing they auctioned off was Drew Barrymore's costume as Danielle in Ever After, which also went for more than they thought they were going to get for it. That's what I would have bought.
Wow. All I can say is a 20,000 pound shirt sounds very heavy. Okay. The next Superman film is in production with at least some filming happening in our own city of Atlanta. But meanwhile, James Gunn revealed that the film title has lost a bit of weight. Instead of being called Superman Legacy, it's just going to be called Superman. It's still scheduled for release on July 11th, 2025. And I was surprised to learn that a character originally created for the 1978 Superman film, Miss Testmacher, is actually going to be in this one, because that's not a character from the comic books. That's a character from Superman the movie.
That is interesting. They've got a few interesting characters they're bringing into this movie. I'm intrigued to see how it'll turn out.
Yeah, a whole bunch of villains in it, which should be, and heroes, villains and heroes in it. So it's not just Superman. But anyway, we'll talk way more about that as we get closer.
Yeah. Speaking of superheroes, Disney CEO, currently Bob Iger, is pushing back against the idea that people have superhero fatigue, which I think is something that even Kevin Feige said is that people were having it. Saying that it's not that people have superhero fatigue, it's that they have bad movie fatigue. I kind of agree with that, but also, like, when you're in a market so super saturated with superhero movies, you really have to be exceptional to get someone excited about it, because it's just the content they've been trenched in for years. And I like superhero movies still. But, you know, he is saying that with making less movies, that they'll be able to focus on making each one better And that has kind of been a hope, and maybe we'll have time to actually look forward to superhero movies again.
Oh gosh, I sure hope so. Okay. Paramount Pictures gave us some release dates a couple of weeks back that we're really excited about. So, for example, a new Naked Gun film is coming out on July 28th, 2025. Liam Neeson will take on the role that Leslie Nielsen made famous. We're sort of keeping it in the LN territory. Paramount also announced that the next Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles animated film has a premiere date of October 8th, 2026. And I'm super excited about that. I really enjoyed the first one.
Yes. Yeah. If you enjoyed the first one of The Sandman, then hopefully you'll enjoy season two, which is not called season two. But we finally got some details about it. Kirby Howell-Baptiste, who played Death in season one and was my favorite part and maybe my favorite episode of the entire first series, will be back a whole lot more in season two. Giving me some actual excitement about the second season. It didn't hit me as it was one of those other things that conceptually I was super excited, but didn't hit me quite as well as I wanted, but I'm going to give it a second chance now.
Cool. Okay. Y'all might remember that Scream 7 has been through a lot already. The original director, Christopher Landon, left. Actress Melissa Barrera was fired. Actress Jenna Ortega pulled out of the movie. Well, things are back on a different track now. The director of the original Scream film, Kevin Williamson, will be coming back to the direct. And star Neve Campbell is back on board. You might remember she skipped Scream 6 over pay disputes. So the question is, do you like scary movies?
No. Sometimes. Okay,
well, you can skip Scream 7 then.
Okay. I've seen the first two now. Speaking of things coming back, the Warner Brothers game Multiverse, which was like the DC comic Game of Thrones, the WB version of Smash Brothers, is back. Apparently it was in beta, it went offline for a year, and they took a whole bunch of feedback into account and are making it better. As well as PvP, they're going to do a PvE option online. It's free to play. The trailer for it is actually really cute now, and the game looks better, so I'm kind of on board. Watching Black Adam punch a gremlin in the face was kind of fun.
Yeah, it's sort of like the end of Space Jam 2, where all those studio-owned characters all show up at the very end, whether it made sense or not. Like, why have the characters from Clockwork Orange feature in a film that's for kids? Mm-hmm. That's just twisted. Anyway. The next film featuring Robert Pattinson's version of the Dark Detective will take a little longer to get to screens. The Batman 2 was originally inked to premiere in October 2025, but now it's looking like October 2026. The reason for the delay mostly has to do with the writer's strike last year, and it means that Superman and Batman won't have to share the same year as their respective films come out.
That's good, I think.
It's good. Did you not see Batman versus Superman? When they have to like share screen time, it's bad. Not just like a fight. It's a bad movie.
I think it's my response was really just I'm not that excited about seeing a Batman movie.
Yeah, I remember you didn't like the first one.
Yeah, no. There were moments, there were things I liked about it, but as an overall piece of art, it just didn't impress me as much as I hoped that it would.
I totally understand.
So something that I hope will end up being a lot of fun because it sounds pretty cool is that the podcast Hello from the Magic Tavern is getting turned into an animated series by Play Hooky Productions and Starburn Industries. So if you don't know who those are, Starburn Industries is the company behind Rick and Morty, and Play Hooky Productions is a production company owned by Mark Berger and Sam Rockwell. Yes, Sam Rockwell, who was the villain in the first Charlie Angels movie, who is in Argyle recently, who I saw on Broadway. It just looks like it's going to be a lot of fun, and they've got a lot of fun like guest stars lined up for it. So, yay.
That's cool. I enjoy that podcast, and I look forward to people reacting when Usador inevitably gives his full name, which takes about 2 minutes to say.
It'll just be one episode. That'll be the whole episode.
It will. I actually have a t-shirt that has his full name on it, and it's surprising to me that they were able to fit it on just one side. All right. Well, it's pretty rare for us to talk about a project that gets uncanceled, but that seems to be the case with Patty Jenkins' Star Wars project. So back in 2020, Patty Jenkins was slated to direct a Star Wars movie about the Rogue Squadron of Rebel pilots. But then in the wake of the Rise of Skywalker movie, that project was kind of shelved. It fizzled out. And now it looks like it might be fizzled back in, at least potentially, because Jenkins revealed she owes, quote, a draft of Star Wars and we will see what happens there, end quote. So it doesn't sound like it's a sure thing, but it does sound like maybe something that was considered to be dead was only mostly dead.
Oh, I love it. Speaking of old movies, which hurts me to say that it's an old movie, Shrek 2 is coming back to theaters because it's hitting its 20-year anniversary. Oh my goodness. So it'll be returning to theaters on April 12th. If you like the Shrek movies, go for some nostalgia. If you're not familiar, the jokes probably won't land because they're time sensitive.
Yeah.
Largely.
No, that was one of the big differences between the DreamWorks approach and Pixar's approach, right? Was that DreamWorks jokes were a lot more topical. And so you might watch and you're like, oh, these are all references to stuff that happened in the 90s. Like, not really relevant anymore. Okay. Well, finally, Netflix's live action adaptation of Avatar The Last Airbender, which we mentioned earlier, is going to get two more seasons of episodes before it calls it quits. I have not yet watched the series. I have, as I said earlier, have seen some mixed reviews, but none of them were as critical as the reviews about the M. Night Shyamalan version of the story. I'm glad that Avatar is going to get a chance to tell a full story. It's not going to suffer the same fate as Cowboy Bebop.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad it got enough viewership to cross that hurdle. So that's it for 30 seconds or less. Whew.
Yeah, now we've got like a ton of actual stories, like so many trailers. And we even cut quite a few.
They're just trailers, so we might get through them kind of quickly.
Yeah. Like the first one here. The first one is a trailer for The Wild Robot, which is from DreamWorks, and I'll save you time. It's WALL-E meets Iron Giant.
I never saw Iron Giant.
Oh my gosh, it's so good, Ariel.
It's so sad.
It's sweet. It's sad in the same way that E.T. is sad.
E.T. is sad.
Iron Giant sad like E.T. is sad. Okay. It really is. Like, Iron Giant is like E.T., but if E.T. were a 200-foot-tall mega death robot.
So, I mean, you know, you just give him the right outfit. This trailer, I thought, it gave me like kind of like goosebumps watching it because it's so beautiful and it's so like emotional kind of from the get-go. And I want to watch it because I want to support, you said it's kind of like Iron Giant and all that. I want to support semi-original movie ideas, right?
Sure.
Beautiful art. But it looks like there's going to be some animal endangerment in it. Even though it's animated, that's going to give me, like, it gave me stress in the trailer. So I want to watch it and support it.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, none of those animals ever existed. So,
I mean, no, yeah. I have a horrible suspension of disbelief.
It's like that imaginary character from Inside Out. I felt nothing when he died because he never existed.
You felt nothing when Bing Bong died?
No, I didn't care at all. It didn't bother me even like to the point where I was like, why are people sniffling? This is literally a character who was only imaginary.
I mean,
even in the context of the movie, like, they're all imaginary because we're watching an animated film. These are all imaginary characters, but this one's extra imaginary.
Ryan Reynolds would disagree with you with the movie if.
Yeah, well, he can take it up with me, except he's too busy running a football club in Wrexham, Wales.
Whatever, whatever House of Imaginary Friend, Dexter's House of Imaginary Friends or whatever. I don't think that's the actual name from Nickelodeon that you were too old to watch. No, it doesn't help. They're real enough to me. I'm invested in their little cartoon lives.
Okay. Well,
also Bing Bong's death was played for comedy a little bit.
I'd have to watch it again to be able to chime in on that. But like this trailer, I thought it was a good trailer. I don't know that I'll go see it because I feel like I've already seen the movie just from the trailer. Like again, it's wearing its influences on its sleeve, in my opinion. Yeah. And so I kind of can see where everything is going. Doesn't mean that it won't be told beautifully and it won't be a beautiful version of that story. But it's just like, you know, sometimes you come across a book where you already kind of know where everything's going to go before you even open it up. So you're like, do I even take the time to read this book? Because I kind of already know. But that's not to say that this was a bad job with the trailer or a bad job with the animation. I think the animation looks great. So maybe it'll turn out that I'm just completely off base and I'll end up seeing it and it'll become one of my favorite animated films of all time. I don't know.
Maybe. Probably better than the good Dinosaur.
Well, okay, sure. Yeah. I saw that film. That's one of the movies I saw on a plane. And I barely remember it. That's how unmemorable The Good Dinosaur was.
Interesting. Well, you know, sometimes you know when you pick up a book where it's going to go. And sometimes you have to read through, like, the first chapter.
Aha, cute segue.
Thank you.
For The Strangers, chapter one. So I'm going to make a wild guess here, Ariel, that you never saw The Strangers.
I thought this was the first one.
No, this is a prequel.
It's chapter one.
So, okay. Let me give you a little history lesson. Several years ago, there was a home invasion horror movie called Funny Games that was, I can't remember what country of origin that was for the original, but it was remade in America. So there was an English language version that was made as well. Same script, though. Funny Games, where in this home invasion movie, these essentially young psychopaths terrorize a couple and they're just doing it for laughs. Funny Games was a weird film because they would break the bad guys, the psychopaths would break the fourth wall and would address the audience directly because they would say that the audience is complicit because they came to see this film, that they are somewhat responsible for the terrible things that are happening to the victims. It's a really interesting kind of idea about the relationship between an audience and art. Then you get to The Strangers. The Strangers is far more straightforward, but it's another story about a couple that then gets terrorized and tortured by young home invaders who explain the only reason they're doing it is because they were there. Like the couple was there and that's the only reason. There's no other deeper meaning to it other than just it was opportunity and they decided to torture them. So The Strangers chapter one is supposed to be somewhat of an origin story. But really to me, based upon this trailer, while it's supposed to be an origin story, mostly to me, it looks like a reboot or a remake of The Strangers. I'm like, this is the same movie.
Yeah. When you were describing the movie, I'm like, are you just describing the trailer I just watched? Because
it's why I put it on here, because like I said, it was interesting that these home invasion horror movies, like the Funny Games came out a year before The Strangers did, which is not long enough for you to necessarily say The Strangers was copying Funny Games, right? Because when you think about film production schedules, likely The Strangers was already in production by the time Funny Games came out. But it just felt like these were two very similar ideas. Now it looks like we're doing that same idea again, and it doesn't seem different enough to me, based upon this trailer, to make it feel like it really is a prequel. It just feels like it kind of feels like how The Grudge has been retold multiple times. There are like so many different versions of that film and they're all the same movie.
I haven't watched The Grudge.
Oh, it's so good, but no, it's not for you.
No, it's not for me. By the way, Google says that the first Funny Games was Austrian.
Okay, Austria. Yeah, I knew it was European, but I was like, it's not French. It's not a French horror movie. I could not remember it was Austrian.
Yeah. Our next trailer is for, I think it's a Netflix movie. It's for a streaming movie called I Saw the Glow, I Saw the TV Glow, which is not about the all-female wrestling show.
No, it's not that glow. It's not the gorgeous ladies of wrestling.
Yeah. It's kind of about these kids who watched like an Are You Afraid of the Dark, Goosebumps-esque kind of series as kids, where there was like a monster of the week that the main characters had to defeat. And now that they're adults, they feel, strangely drawn to it. And then maybe get sucked inside the TV because it's actually real. And maybe there are other people. It looked interesting, but I had a slightly hard time following the trailer.
Yeah, no, I think the trailer is purposefully made a little little hard to parse, so that it's hard to tell, like, is this going to actually have elements of the supernatural or the paranormal, or are the moments that we're seeing really just within the imagination of characters, and it's kind of like a reflection of what their imaginations are? It's hard to say. And I honestly don't know if it's true or not, like which version of that, or if it's something totally different from what we're guessing. I thought it was interesting. It actually made me think of a creepypasta, which I can't remember the name of anymore. You probably never dove into creepypasta, did you, Ariel? It's like fan written horror stories on the internet.
I don't think so. I'm doing
Slenderman nope. Came out of creepypasta, that kind of stuff.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. I've seen like some Slenderman clips, so probably I've seen some creepypasta, but I haven't attributed it to creepypasta.
Sure, absolutely. There's one, and I don't remember the name of it. Maybe it's like, I can't remember the name of the, maybe it was Candle Cove. I think it was Candle Cove, where there was a creepypasta about some mysterious children's show that both existed and didn't exist. Like kids
was it
saw
really
it.
Weird and bizarre.
Yes.
And with like a smiling sun and a puppet.
Probably. It has been a very long time since I've gone through that. But this is what kind of made me think of it when I was watching this trailer. I was like, oh, is this going to be like an adaptation of that concept? But it seems like this is, while pulling from similar ideas, it's not that.
Gotcha. I don't know if I've seen Creep Candle Cove. It looks interesting to me. The thing that I found really interesting about it is that the trailer played almost like a billboard magazine. In fact, they said this is has like an instantly like iconic soundtrack to it.
Yeah, which feels very Garden State to me.
yeah, it was a weird call out for a streaming movie, I think.
Yeah, it's not the kind of thing that I would immediately start to. I wouldn't look to a movie like this to have like an iconic soundtrack. It's not like the movies I think of that have that sort of vibe to them. Typically, are movies where the music plays a big part in the film itself. Mm-hmm. So Garden State's one example. That's a very like hipster kind of twee sort of thing, but like High Fidelity would be another example, or to name another John Cusack movie, Gross Point Blank would be another one. Like, yes. Those are ones where I think like the soundtrack plays a big part because it's almost like the soundtrack is another character in the film that you're watching.
Or, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy or Hudson Hawk or
other good examples. Yeah. Hudson Hawk, because it's part of the plot. You know, yeah. they use songs to keep time during heists because that makes sense. Watches don't need to exist.
Such a good bad movie.
I love Hudson Hawk. I actually don't think it's as bad as a lot of people say it is. It's not good. It's very, very schlocky, but I don't think it's as bad. Like, it got a reputation for being one of the worst movies ever made. And I don't think it even comes close, because as weird as that movie is, it's never dishwater dull. And I think the worst movies fall into dishwater dull.
It is satirically over the top.
Yes.
But I feel like that's on purpose.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, there's no way that was an accident. Anyway, I saw the TV glow. Interesting trailer. Check it out. But I'm not sure what to think about that yet.
This next trailer, I'm going to say I watched it. I didn't watch it because you put it in here. I watched it because I was doing laundry and watching some Critical Role while putting away laundry. And the TV in my bedroom is on top of my my sock drawer. And it came on and scared the bejesus out of me while I was rolling and putting socks away.
Yeah. So the trailer that Ariel is alluding to is the trailer for the new Inside Out movie. No, I'm kidding.
Yes,
I'm kidding. It's the trailer for the first Omen, which of course is a prequel to the classic horror movie, The Omen. So the first Omen is set before that. There have been 6 films in the Omen franchise over the course of like 5 decades. Yeah. So the first Omen details sort of it looks like it's like a conspiracy / mystery horror movie where apparently people like figures in the church, meaning the Catholic Church, are orchestrating the birth of the Antichrist for reasons that I don't understand, but that seems to be the gist of what the trailer suggests from my reading anyway.
Yeah. I didn't super follow. I honestly at first thought it was a part of the Nun franchise or the other one that's weird and creepy that's had a bunch. There was a trailer we watched recently that had like a nun in some magazines on a subway station. That's what I thought it was.
Oh yeah, that one. I think that one was the Nun. I think that was one of the Nun ones,
or Hereditary, or whatever.
I think it was the Nun 2. None of Your Business is what that one was. So, or Ariel ain't having none of that. I think that was the one you mentioned. I was at first thinking you were talking about that other religious themed horror movie trailer we watched recently. And that title, I can't remember at all at the moment. I just remember there was like a dramatic scene where you see one woman just steps off an ledge and falls to her death. And like, I can't.
Is that Good or Poor Things? Because
no, it's not Poor Things. It's not Poor Things.
Is it? Not. Is it the Russell Crowe Does the Da Vinci Code movie?
It's not the Pope's Exorcist either. No. golly, I would have to go back and look at our various lineups to find out which one it was. So
was it the Suicide Squad? Izakai?
Because that's in why don't you talk about that? Because that's in today's lineup. I'll look over our previous episodes to see if I can find out what's bugging my memory. So tell us about the Suicide Squad trailer.
So this is an anime, I think based on, it looks like it's a actual DC property, and it's based off of James Gunn's The Suicide Squad. So like Peacemaker is in there, and the current DC version of Harley Quinn, or the most recent DC version of Harley Quinn, etc. It honestly looks kind of interesting to me. I like DC animated stuff, and it looks like it definitely hits the anime vibes, and it looks very self-referential. So almost like they're putting a Deadpool spin on it. But I'm going to watch it.
Cool. Yeah. I thought it looked action packed. I don't know if I'm going to watch it. The version we saw, the trailer we saw, was subtitled, right? Because it's all in Japanese. Mm-hmm. And so it's subtitled in English. And I don't mind subtitles. I know some people do. I don't mind them. But this animation style is so fast moving that I felt like I was missing a lot of the cool stuff happening in the trailer because I was busy trying to read the subtitles to see what people were saying. And if that's the experience I'm going to have while watching the show, I much prefer subtitles to dubbed. Don't get me wrong. But I don't want to have to watch a thing twice, once so I know what everyone's saying and once so I can see what the heck they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I like doing? I like watching the dubbed version with subtitles because they don't match up.
Yeah, which, by the way, that starts to make you wonder, like, which version is more true to the original?
Yeah, yeah. Thankfully, I have a lot of friends who are learning foreign languages that could probably tell me or speak them natively. I suspect we'll get a dubbed version of this.
Probably
at some point.
Probably a lot of people prefer dubbed to subtitled. I think people who identify themselves as quote unquote true fans often will dismiss dubs because they want to hear the original actors. But let me tell y'all, there are cases where I've heard the original actors of stuff like Japanese animation. They're not always superior. They can be, but it's not always better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes you're like, well, that's someone who's clearly putting on a voice because it doesn't sound even remotely natural.
I felt that way about the dubs in Squid Game.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't care for the dubbed version of Squid Game. So the same thing can be true of dubbed versions, obviously. Like occasionally you'll get people who are phenomenal voice actors and who are, working with material and will do a really good job. But other times you get like the worst dubs where you're getting incredibly inappropriate emotional reads on lines and things like that. Sometimes you wonder if they even were given the film footage to react to.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure some of that has to do with, they do try to line up what you're saying with the mouth that is speaking.
That is true. Yeah. Like it's otherwise it can be a little distracting.
Yeah. Yeah. Something that I don't have a good segue. I was going to make something up and then I was like, no, that's a poop segue and I'm not going to say it. We got a new trailer for Fallout though. And that looks, I think, really cool.
Fallout does look pretty cool. Like I would probably put it behind The Last of Us as far as an adaptation that has me excited. Like The Last of Us, when I saw the trailers for that, I was taken by how well they had captured the spirit of the game. I feel like they're doing a pretty good job. I feel like they're closer to the spirit of Fallout than the Borderlands movie is to the spirit of the Borderlands games.
I agree. And Fallout does this weird thing. Like I know for some people, some of my friends, the Fallout games don't stylistically hit them, even though like on paper, they entirely should. And I think it's just, in Fallout, there's sometimes it's really funny and sometimes it's really serious.
Tonal inconsistencies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can come across a scene where it's absolutely horrific, followed immediately by goofy robot making humorous statements. Yeah. Fallout is tonally inconsistent. And I get that. Like I feel the same way. But the aesthetic really appeals to me. I've always found it aesthetically very pleasing.
Same. And I think that this trailer at least smooths out some of that tonal inconsistency that I've felt in the game, at least in the trailer. When they're telling a longer story, it may not hold true.
And Walton Goggins looks fantastic as a ghoul, and his performance looks like it's going to be one of the really the compelling anchors of this show.
Yeah, yeah. That is one of those actors that does such great work and oftentimes flies under the radar.
Yeah, he also plays a lot of terrible, terrible people. In The Hateful Eight, he's a real, everyone in The Hateful Eight is terrible. That's kind of the point. But but his character is really awful and he does such a good job with it. And I really love his performances. He commits so much to whatever role he's doing. And they're not as often as he plays awful people, they are awful people who are very different from each other. It's not like he's playing the same character no matter what film he's in, right? Like, it's very distinct.
Yeah, yeah. I like watching his work. And this in particular, I'm like, I cannot wait to see him do this role. So,
well, next up, we've got the trailer for the Inside Out sequel. This is a story about a nun who goes to Rome in order to stop the Catholic Church from bringing about the birth of the Antichrist. Or I might have clicked on the wrong link.
It sounds accurate.
Pixar's fun-filled Antichrist extravaganza.
Sometimes that's what it feels like when you're going through puberty, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so obviously the Inside Out sequel is returning us to the beloved emotions in control of a character whose name I don't remember anymore. Gosh. Do you remember the name? You don't remember her name either.
Riley.
Riley.
It's Riley.
Okay. So
I didn't even have to look it up.
but you almost did.
I almost did.
Yeah. So, like, let's not give you too much credit. I deserve no credit at all. I couldn't remember Riley. But yeah, so it's the emotions, and of course, as Riley is going through puberty, new emotions emerge, and like things like shame and in the trailer, we see the new emotions kind of lock away the old emotions, claiming that their old emotions are too simplistic and not relevant anymore. And that appears to be the, based upon this trailer, the central conflict of the movie.
Yeah, I do like the SAR. There's a point in the trailer where they speak across a sarcasm.
Yes.
Which is very funny. I like Pixar sequels don't always hit me super well. I don't know if I'm going to watch it, but I am excited for one thing, which is it's so dumb, but I was doing an emotional improv game at one point in the last 5 years. And I said ennui, and nobody else in the improv circle knew what that was.
Yeah, they need to just
so old.
They need to go visit Paris. If you visit Paris, you will experience ennui firsthand. Maybe not personally, but it'll definitely be all around you.
Well, and then I followed up with Twitter pated, which nobody also understood, and I was like,
"You gotta watch Bambi."
Yeah, I figured that kids nowadays still did, but maybe that's not the case.
Yeah. So yeah, it looks cute. I mean, I understand where you're coming from with like the whole Pixar sequels thing. I think Toy Story 2 is maybe the only Pixar sequel that I really clicked with. I thought Finding Dory was okay. I hated the Cars sequels. Actually, I should just say I hated Cars 2. I don't think I even saw Cars 3. I totally get what you're saying. I think this looks fine. I honestly, when I watched the trailer, I thought to myself, this feels like a premise that could have been done in a short as opposed to a feature length film.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But yeah, shorts don't bring in the money. So yeah,
they don't pay the bills, as they say.
That's true.
One person who should have very little problem paying the bills is Nick Cage, because he's been in cast in every single project that's ever been made.
Except for he also buys a lot of really expensive things. He's a collector.
I want to say that he actually had tax issues once, so maybe I shouldn't make the joke that he can afford anything. But no, the reason why I made that stupid joke is because our next trailer that we want to talk about is Arcadian, which features Nick Cage. He is not like the main focus of the movie, but he is an important character in the film. And it's a horror film, which was giving me vibes of A Quiet Place, a lot of like A Quiet Place. But it's also, from what I've read, really akin to James Cameron's Aliens.
Oh, interesting. It gave me like M. Night Shyamalan's Signs.
Yeah. So
vibes, which I actually enjoyed that movie. So yeah.
The premise is it's set in a, let's all say it together, a post-apocalyptic Earth. Yeah.
Utopia. What?
No, not quite there. I mean, yes, we both hate people, but no, not a utopia. No, it's a post-apocalyptic landscape where at night, these creatures come out. They mostly come out at night, mostly. And then they like absolutely lay waste to anything that's caught outside at night. And so every night you have to board up your home and be real quiet and just kind of hope you can make it through. And so the story takes place with Nick Cage playing a character who has two teenage sons. And the events of the film are happening like 15 years after whatever event caused this to start in the first place. And one of his two sons gets caught outside at night, and then hilarity ensues, or horror, one of the two.
Horror. I actually read, after watching the trailer, I read an article about it because I was really curious to see what the aliens or the
monsters
look like.
Yeah,
you said it was akin to Aliens, and that's what got stuck in my brain.
Yeah.
And I figured they were just going to be like creepy, dirty pollution people. but apparently that's not the case. But apparently the kids like to play What Brought on the Apocalypse game in the movie. And I think that that's a delightful touch. This actually looked really interesting to me. This is one that I'll have to watch. I'll have to like read the spoilers about it first, but I might actually watch it.
Like, for one thing, you need to find out if the dog lives.
Yes, that is very, very true. I had that thought when I was watching it and I forgot till now, so thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, because there's a dog in the trailer, so it's a pet dog, so obviously I'm looking out for you, Ariel. Although I'm the same way.
Yeah,
but
yeah, maybe the dog belongs to the others.
In which case, he's just the family's just cool with him being in the house because he's in the house.
he's a spy. He's like undercover.
I got it. He's a sentry. He's a vanguard.
But I don't actually want that to happen because I don't want the family have to harm the dog either.
Yeah, it's a
worst case.
It looks interesting. The review I saw gave it 3 stars, but I don't know how many stars is max. I think 5, so 3 out of 5. It's gotcha. Better than average, but yeah, it looked to me like I kept having A Quiet Place thoughts about it, because again, A Quiet Place, post-apocalyptic monster threat, family trying to keep itself protected, like it just felt very similar. And from what I understand, that's the biggest weakness of this film, is not that it tells a story poorly, but it tells a story that's been told a lot in recent years.
Gotcha. And here I was looking forward to a more grounded version of Nick Cage's performance in Color Out of Space.
You know, I still haven't seen that, but it keeps getting recommended to me.
It is. It's a lot.
Okay.
I mean, you're familiar with the story. It's a sure. lot. And Nick Cage goes off the rails, but in a very good way. Like, I can't say I recommend the movie, because a lot of the people that might watch it that I know wouldn't enjoy it, but you probably would.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll finally do that after I watch everything else that's on my list. So
I actually bought the DVD of it. It was like $3 at a Walmart bargain bin, but then I gifted it to a friend for their birthday.
Well, speaking of things that were on my list, for the longest time, The Crow was on my list. I'll talk about the original one, but then I saw it in the theater, and then I watched one of the terrible, terrible, terrible sequels. I can't remember which one, but I did it for a different podcast many years ago, and I remember it was horrible. But The Crow is one of those guilty pleasure movies for me, because it's, you know, essentially just a revenge film is really what The Crow is. It's based off, you know, graphic novels and stuff. And now we're getting a reboot of the Crow series, or really it doesn't even have to be a reboot. It could literally just be another chapter in it, because the Crow follows different characters who take on the persona of this sort of revenant, yeah, undead vengeance machine called the Crow. And we got a trailer for it. What did you think of the trailer for the Crow?
I didn't watch the original Crow until I met my husband, he introduced me to it and I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was like, you know, I like Van Helsing. I like Dylan Dog Dead of Night. It kind of fell into, it was more serious, but it fell into that realm of realism to me. This trailer, it didn't grab me at all in any way.
Yeah, I hear you. I want to say that, like, I'm intrigued, but I'm not really, because again, like, if you're familiar with the source material at all, whether that's the earlier films or the actual graphic novels or whatever, then again, like, you know where this is going to go. You know where this film's going from the beginning. It's just a question of how does it get from point A to point B. And aesthetically, it didn't really appeal to me the same way that the original Crow film did.
Yeah. It's got more of a, this is quoting a friend of mine who said it's got more of an edgelord vibe than a goth vibe.
Well, and his Crow makeup, when we finally see it toward the end of the trailer, looks, made me think more of the
Joaquin Phoenix is the Joker.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. It does feel much more Joker-esque than. Also, it's weird because this is a tangent, honestly. So the professional wrestler Sting took on a Crow-like persona when he wrestled at WCW way back in the day. And then he did it a little bit in WWE before he got hurt. Well, he recently had his retirement match, his last match ever. And so he had made the Crow makeup really iconic in the wrestling world. And it was interesting to me, like, you know, he clearly took it from the Crow. Like, there was no denying, there's no mistaking it. It was very much inspired by the original Crow film. And so it was interesting to me, but not compelling to me, that they decided not to go with a look that pulled from that same aesthetic. Like, there's little elements of it, but it's mostly like runny mascara. It's not, I don't know. It just didn't hit me.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Which is sad, but also I didn't think The Crow needed a remake. So.
Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily object to a remake because it's one of those stories where, like, if you were to go back and watch the first Crow film, there's no question about it. It's a very dated film, right? Like, it's going to look dated. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it may not have the impact that an updated version does. But again, without the really dramatic aesthetics, I just don't think there's enough there. It's just another, like, ghostly revenge story.
Yeah, and we have plenty Constantine and John Wick that has flooded the market in recent years.
Yes, so. Yeah. Like, there's no shortage of this is an unstoppable killing force out for revenge type movies. Like, we've had plenty of those in the last decade.
Yeah.
One thing we had a lot of for almost 21 years was content from an online media company called Rooster Teeth, which started back on April 1st, 2003, with the launch of their flagship animated series, machine animated series, Red versus Blue. And now Warner Brothers Discovery is shutting down Rooster Teeth. The story is that the studio has not been profitable for a decade. Interestingly enough, if you go back a decade, that's right around the time Rooster Teeth was acquired by a company called Fullscreen. And before that, Rooster Teeth was an independent company. So draw your own conclusions. But very sad story. A lot of very talented people who have worked at that studio over the years and who currently work there. It's not shut down yet, but it won't be long before it is. And there are a lot of questions up in the air about what will happen to the various properties that belong to the studio, whether or not they'll continue under some new ownership or if they'll just kind of fizzle out. On one side, Red versus Blue was already scheduled to have to publish its final season, which is already written and produced and everything. Yeah. So that story will be finished, but other series like Ruby, it's not as certain.
Yeah, WB is saying that they are going to release a bunch of stuff that hasn't been released but is in the works. We'll see if they actually hold to that, because we know what that parent company has done with some other properties recently.
WB is very good at not releasing things that are finished.
Yeah, so maybe a like another independent platform like Dropout or something will collaborate. Who knows? But don't worry, we're losing original content, but we're getting a reboot of old content. There's a Reefer Madness revival happening in LA on May 30th. It's an all-star team doing it. It's Kristen Bell, Christian Campbell, Alan Cumming, and then like a choreographer from Spencer Lift from So You Think You Can Dance and Spring Awakening. It's probably going to be a very good performance, honestly. Yeah.
And to be clear, this is Reefer Madness, the musical.
Yeah. Yeah. Not the old 30s anti-drug
film
movie.
Yeah. Instead, it's the musical that makes fun of the old 1930s anti-drug movie. Yeah. So I was unfamiliar with Reefer Madness, the musical, until Showtime did a filmed version of it, like an actual movie version of the musical. And when I saw that, I thought, wow, this is really entertaining. Like, there's some great songs in here. It is very silly in how it's sending up that original film. If you've never seen the original film, it is just full of hysteria around marijuana. And it is hilarious because it's treating marijuana like it will drive you in crazy and you will become the murderous psychopath. it's so weird and over the top. So the musical makes fun of that. Right. And now these folks like Kristen Bell and Christian Campbell were part of the original cast when this was just a show in Los Angeles before it ever became anything else. Kristen Bell would be in the film version as well. Mm-hmm. Actually, Christian Campbell did too. Christian Campbell, brother of Neve Campbell, who also appeared in the film in a part that was made just for her for the purposes of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So that should be fun if you're in that area. That's probably not one that I'm going to travel for, but I'm sure it's going to be a great time.
I wish I could travel to go see that because it is such a silly show, and I love Alan Cumming and I love Kristen Bell.
Yeah.
And I would love to see this. It's like the piece that we pulled from, the Hollywood Reporter piece. Obviously all these folks are involved in the production. I'm still not clear if they're starring in it because it's 25 years later and they're playing like Christian Campbell and Kristen Bell were already older than the characters they were playing, which are supposed to be like these high school sweethearts. Now they're 25 years older than that. So I don't know.
It's probably funnier if they play the original characters.
I think so too. I just don't know. Like, you could make it a whole thing. I think it works better on stage anyway. Like, it's not going to be a Dear Evan Hansen where everyone looks at Evan Hansen and says, why is this 35-year-old man going to high school?
Yeah. Speaking of old men playing children.
Yeah, this one's all you.
So there's this children's book called Harold and the Purple Crayon that apparently Jonathan never read as a kid.
Nope.
About this little boy who had a purple crayon and could draw things and they'd kind of come to life. Adorable story. It's an adorable children's series. It's actually... I played a changeling game when I was a young adult, like the changeling RPG, mm-hmm. where I was playing a character who had a purple crayon and would go around and draw things because they so loved that book growing up that when they became a fairy person, they did that. So that tells you my love for the IP. But in this, Zachary Levi is playing Harold, a grown-up Harold, with some friends. And I guess he draws purple things. I forgot that this is gonna be a thing. I feel like maybe we briefly talked about it at one point, because then I saw they released a new poster, which is why it's coming up again. But then I looked at the original poster. I'm like, maybe I did see that this was happening.
Yeah, the original poster was not a good idea.
No,
I saw when I saw that original poster, it looked like there was something else being held in that hand.
Ah, yep. I see it. Anyhow, they were probably trying to avoid having to pay like royalties to Crayola for having like an identifiable like crayon paper on it, but it does hurt it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, that's happening. Zooey Deschanel's also in it. Little Ray Howery and Jemaine Clement. So great cast. If you ask me, if you ask Jonathan, he'll probably say like semi great cast.
They got Jemaine Clement, so that's a big plus. But Zooey Deschanel, that's a huge minus.
I still hold that if you ever get into New Girl and give it a couple episodes, you know, that you would change your mind about her.
Yeah. Tin Man just did a number on me.
Tin Man is not like Tin Man and 100 or sorry, Tin Man and Elf are not a good example of her acting prowess at all.
Yeah.
At all.
Well,
like, those were bad things for her to be in. I think you should give New Girl a try.
It's only fair that I do, because clearly like Alan Cumming is also in Tin Man and I still love Alan Cumming's work. So I should give her another chance.
I really think that New Girl is where she was able to be her, like, a quirky, as you put it, twee personality mm-hmm. that just was absolutely charming and delightful and relatable, and maybe more relatable to me than to you because an awkward school teacher. But give it a shot at some point. Add it to your ever-growing list of things you won't watch.
Maybe you have Hulu. Okay, I'll do that. So our last story, this one's actually a little outside of our normal purview in a way, which is that we got some cast additions to the upcoming film SNL 1975, which tells the story of what was going on leading up to the very first broadcast of Saturday Night Live for the very first episode.
Yeah, I put it in there because I don't know, in my brain, Saturday Night Live often rides like a line with like Broadway stuff.
Sure.
And its creativity, because it's also in New York, but
it has a big impact on pop culture in general, right? Like there are eras of Saturday Night Live when the show was really going well, where it would not just shape humor in many ways, but it kind of set people up to becoming the next wave of comedic powerhouses in Hollywood, right? So like Will Ferrell comes from there, Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, like Dan Aykroyd. You're talking about folks who really got their start at Saturday Night Live and then went on to become these huge forces in not just comedy, like some of them have done drama as well. But like that's Bill Hader's another great example, right? Like there'd be no Barry without Saturday Night Live. So like I can see why there's that importance. And this is interesting because it is going to be kind of detailing the convergence of stuff that had to happen for that first show to even be a thing. And I expect this will be very high energy, and we'll probably see characters indulging in illicit substances, because at least a couple of them were very well known for that.
Yeah, probably, especially in the 70s. It's based off a bunch of interviews. The reason I included it is because there are a lot of geeky people working on it. Finn Wolfhard was just announced as a cast member from Stranger Things and a bazillion other things, including Ghostbusters Afterlife and Ghostbusters Let It Go.
Yeah, I was about to say Ghostbusters, Baby It's Cold Outside.
Baby It's Cold Outside, which interestingly, Jason Reitman and Gil Keenan, who wrote the script for this movie, SNL 1975, also are the team behind Ghostbusters Afterlife and Ghostbusters Baby It's Cold Outside.
So this
sounds interesting to me, and I might watch it.
Well, and I was born in the 70s, but I was...
Were you?
Yeah, I was.
No.
I was far, far too young to watch Saturday Night Live when I was a little kid, but like subsequently there would be reruns of old Saturday Night Live shows that would be on various channels. So I watched a lot of Saturday Night Live from the like original 1970s era. These would usually be edited down episodes. Like often they didn't include the musical guest, for example. And they would probably cut some of the more like some of the sketches that bombed totally. They would cut until you would get to the early 1980s where that's just the show. Everything bombs. Once Eddie Murphy left the show, things really went downhill. But I watched a lot of those, and so I have some curiosity about this. It's interesting to me that this movie is even being made, because like I would only think that people around my age or older would even be familiar with the 1970s era of Saturday Night Live. So the audience is kind of limited, but they are casting a lot of, you know, very young actors to play age appropriate versions of the real life people who were, you know, putting together Saturday Night Live. So maybe that will draw in younger audiences, just folks who are fans of these younger actors.
And like current SNL, not all of the cast members, a lot of the cast members of SNL tend to be very young because they're comedians and writers that are trying to get their start.
Yeah.
So if you're a fan of current SNL, then you might go, oh, I like SNL, so I've watched some of the classic stuff, right? Or I want to check out and see how it got started. Mm-hmm. I will say, like, I still occasionally watch SNL. It depends on the guest. You know, and so some of it's really good and a lot of it's but I still hold that Colin Jost and Michael Che are the best Weekend Update presenters ever.
They're incredible. They're incredible. Yeah. Seth Meyers was really good back in the day, but those two together, the chemistry they have and the fact that they annually have that thing where they'll write the jokes for the other person and they aren't allowed to see what the jokes are until it's live. That's an incredible bit. And it's like, it's so high pressure, high risk, high reward. It really is incredible. So they hit on something really special.
Yeah. It's my favorite part of the show. Unless Adam Driver is a special guest, because man, he commits to those skits so hard.
I also really liked Pedro Pascal. I felt that he was like, I mean, he did break pretty regularly, but apart from that, like his Mushmouth LA speak stuff is, is hilarious. Which I've actually seen him do on late night TV as well. And it's still just as funny, but I'm curious about this. Like, I hope that it will be entertaining and funny in parts and not just dramatic. Like, I get that there's a lot of drama happening too. You've got a lot of egos as well. Like, this isn't just a bunch of friends putting a show together. These are a bunch of ambitious comedians and writers. And so there's a lot of egos present, and I'm sure not everyone got along. So that I'm sure will be a part of it as well. But yeah, I'm curious about this. Before we sign off, one thing that we did not talk about, but it was on our lineup and we just kind of skipped over it, was that, you know, the Oscars happened while we were on hiatus. Yeah. And I know that you didn't watch the ceremony. I didn't watch the ceremony when it was actually happening. Have you caught any of the segments or anything since then?
Yes. So I watched bits and pieces of it. I had family in town, so I wasn't able to watch the full thing. I did watch the best original screenplay portion, because one of my acting coaches and dear friends was in one of the nominated movies, May December. And the clip that the Oscars was using, like on TikTok and social media, where they would show like some of the script and they'd show the scene above it, was her scene in the movie.
Oh, that's
cool. So I was super, super excited to see her be on the Oscars, because she's a phenomenal actress and a wonderful person. Julie, I know you don't listen, but you rock. They changed the scene for the actual Oscar show.
Yeah.
I was so upset. But I did. I watched the bit with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito.
That's fantastic. A great bit. And Michael Keaton.
Who doesn't say a word. I thought it was going to be a Twins reference, but it wasn't.
Yeah, that was the whole joke, right? Like they set it up to make it seem like it's going to be a reference to Twins, because we also know the work on the sequel for Twins. And instead of it being about Twins or its sequel, it ends up being a joke about how they both were beaten up by Batman.
Yeah.
That was great. Yeah. I love that. And I watched the I'm Just Ken performance.
Yes. Did you watch John Cena present the costuming award?
I am aware of what happened, but I have not actually watched that segment.
Apparently, and I only found this out after the fact, it was in solidarity with like costumers asking for better pay and such. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, the idea being that you're naked without us, right? Like that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very funny bit. I suggest you watch it. Also, if you see the behind the scenes pictures, John Cena is not actually naked. He's in a strapless thong. Well, it's not even a thong. He's in strapless underwear. So it's like a big padded piece in the front and then a horrible, like unflattering giant flap of fabric that's taped to his backside. So you don't see anything untoward, not even butt crack. But even John Cena can't make that piece of clothing look sexy.
Yeah. So the things I heard about the Oscars were, largely positive. I also saw the bit between Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling where they're razzing each other over Oppenheimer and Barbie. Oh, you didn't? Yeah.
I didn't, but I am looking forward to seeing them both in Fall Guy, so I'll have to check it
out. Yeah, no, you'll have to watch the little segment between the two of them because it's scripted, obviously, but it's scripted as they're insulting each other over Barbie and Oppenheimer. And like they're sniping a bit at each other and it's just very funny. And then like the Margot Robbie's reaction shots are fantastic too. So nice. Yeah, that's definitely worth seeing. So I heard like most people seem to have a good time. I don't know what the general reaction is as to the outcome of the Oscars. Cause obviously, I'm guessing some people were probably upset that, over some of the winners that happens every year. There was at least one that surprised me, but I would have to look them all up now to be able to tell you which one it was. I just remember looking at them and I'm like, oh wow, really?
Yeah. I'm sad I missed it. I loved spending time with family. I don't regret that at all, but I do enjoy watching them because I like watching the people who make all of the stuff that we enjoy all year kind of get to have fun with it, which is what they've been trending towards lately. But this has been an incredibly long episode that will need little to no editing. So we should probably wrap it up.
Yes. Yes.
So Jonathan, if they want to reach out to us about one of the myriad of things we've talked about today, how should listeners do that?
Well, what you need to do is you need to go back and listen to all the ways that I have described getting in touch with us, all those different methodologies. And you're going to need to make an animated series about that. And it's going to be cast with a guy from Chicago, a wizard, and a shapeshifter who, let's face it, more times than not, is a badger. And these three characters are going to go on adventures that are all related to the various ways that I have described as to how you can get in touch with us if you want us to answer your questions. And once you get that animated feature finished and you publish it on some platform, you're going to see a comment. And the first comment that pops up is going to be some rando that says first. But right under that, it's going to be me. And I'm going to say, hey, saw this. Good job. What's your question?
Yeah, and if you don't want to risk getting sued for stealing IP from Hello from the Magic Tavern, you can reach out to us on social media in other ways, on Facebook and Instagram and Threads. We are a Large Nerdron Collider. We're also a Large Nerdron Collider on Discord. There is an invitation to join our Discord, which has been a little quiet, but hopefully we'll pick back up now that we are back to recording. On our website, www.largenerdroncollider.com, on Twitter/X. Yes, we are still there. We are LNC_podcast, if that's how you've got to reach out to us. And you can also email us. Our email is largenerdronpod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening as always, and thanks for being patient while we were off traveling and stuff. Until next time, I am Ariel. Nothing to insert here, Kasten.
And I've been Jonathan. Oops, I'm a chicken nugget again, Strickland.
Oh no! No, Jonathan!
Need that Szechuan sauce.
The Large Nerdron Collider was created by Ariel Kasten and produced, edited, published, deleted, undeleted, published again, cursed at, by Jonathan Strickland. Music by Kevin MacLeod of Incomptech.com.